When Eurovision welcomes a new country into the contest, it's usually a celebration, as new fans and cultures join in on the fun. On today's episode of ESC 101, we are taking a look at the life of Kyriaki Papadopoulou, also known as Marinella, who debuted for Greece at the Eurovision Song Contest 1974. Join us as we learn about the life of Marinella and the scandalous nature of her selection. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 32. My name is Alexander. Before we get into today's episode, I'd like to share the upcoming schedule for the next few weeks. As you're probably already aware, Eurovision 2024 is coming up. All of the songs and the running order have been released, and I'd like to dedicate some time to this year's contest. Starting on April 19th, I'll be putting a pause on the historic topics and covering the 2024 contest instead. Here's a rundown of the next couple of episodes. Next week will be episode 33, featuring the Eurovision Travel Guide for Sweden, covering 1958 to 2023, which will be posted next Friday as usual. Then our content will switch from Eurovision history to Eurovision 2024. Episodes 34, 35, and 36 will feature my reactions to the studio version of the 2024 entries, as well as my qualification predictions. Those episodes will continue to be posted on the standard Friday schedule. There will be no episode on Friday, May 10th, as that week is Eurovision week and I'll be busy watching the contest and rooting for my favorite entries to qualify. After Eurovision week, episodes 37 and 38 will cover my reaction to the live shows, with episode 37 covering the acts that didn't qualify, and episode 38 that'll cover the acts that made it to the grand final. Those episodes will also be posted on the standard Friday schedule, and then after that, we'll return to Eurovision history in episode 39, which will be scheduled for Friday, May 31st. All of our episodes will be posted on Fridays at 7 a.m. Eastern. There will be an Instagram post with the schedule, and I'll have reminders in place both in the next few episodes as well as on our Instagram page. If you prefer to keep yourself away from spoilers, you can check out our back catalog of episodes, or if you're looking for something different, I recommend the Eurovision Forever Project from the Douzepoint podcast. Those series of episodes cover every single Eurovision entry from 1956 until 2022, so it's guaranteed to be spoiler-free. Now that we've got our schedule set for the next few months, let's dive into this week's episode and meet Marinella, Greece's first entrant at the Eurovision Song Contest in 1974. Kyriaki Papadopoulou, known by her stage name Marinella, was born on May 19, 1938 in Thessaloniki, Greece. Born to Greek refugees from Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul, from the Ottoman Empire, now modern-day Turkey, she is the youngest of four children. Her family is quite extensive, and despite coming from a poor background, she was surrounded by loving and artistic family members. Her Wikipedia page mentions that her family used to gather around a turntable and sing music, with her father teaching her and her siblings how to waltz and tango. Marinella's career in the arts began at a young age. Her first step into music was at age 4, where she sang on a radio broadcast called Pediki Ora, translated as Children's Hour. In 1950, at the age of 12, she became involved in singing jingles for a local business, being featured in a few advertisements. She continued to dabble in various projects until the age of 15, where she decided to dedicate herself to finishing her education. Upon finishing school, she returned to the theater, where at age 17, she joined a singing troupe that traveled across Greece, performing in small theater venues. While touring with the troupe, the lead singer fell ill, and she was asked to fill in the role. With her knowledge of music and her memorization of the material, she let her skills shine and impressed the troupe so much, she ended up replacing the head of the troupe and took the role of lead singer. I have no idea how the original lead felt, but I hope the takeover was a positive experience for everyone. Upon turning 18 in 1956, she entered into the Thessaloniki Military Theater, as it ended up paying her better than her work with the troupe. This is also where her music career began. She ended up singing at the Panorama, a venue in Thessaloniki where a Greek actor/singer named Tolis Harmas met Marinella and coined her stage name, drawing inspiration from one of his songs. In 1957, Marinella released her first song called Nitsa Elenitsa, translated as Little Helen. Early in her career, she ended up collaborating with Stelios Kazantidis, apologize for my mispronunciation of his name, and she eventually formed a duo with Stelios, which brought huge acclaim to them both. They began singing in nightclubs, and the pair eventually moved to Athens. As their fame grew, opportunities came for them to tour in various countries, including the United States and Australia. It was in 1960 where Marinella also found an opportunity to appear in films. She starred in 18 films, with 10 of those films featuring both Marinella and Stelios. As Marinella's career in music, theater, and film grew, she ended up marrying Stelios on May 7, 1964, continuing to tour across Germany and the United States in the meantime. However, just a year later, Stelios was becoming reluctant to tour, and in 1966, both of them ended up divorcing, but they continued to sing together until 1968. Despite still recording with Stelios, Marinella began planning her solo career in 1967 with the help of various Greek composers and musicians. Her first move was to perform in Soviet Russia for the first time, and she continued to build her own name in the music scene in the 1970s. Before entering into the Eurovision Song Contest, Marinella had competed in a few international music festivals and competitions. This includes the International Festival of Popular Song in Brazil in 1970, where she represented Greece with the song Kira Georgena, translated as Wife of George, where she placed fourth among 38 countries, as well as the Marché International du Disque et de l'Édition Musicale, or MIDEM, in Cannes in 1973, being the first Greek singer to do so. MIDEM is basically an international business event for musicians, producers, managers, and executives to develop networking, technology, branding, as well as hosting live music performances to showcase talents. In 1971, Marinella appeared on the show Nana Mouskouri with the Athenians, which aired on the BBC. Nana Mouskouri represented Luxembourg in 1963, despite being Greek. Eurovision has never had any nationality requirements, so countries can pick their artists from any country to represent them. This little brush with Eurovision history will resurface in a few years. In 1973, Marinella had gotten herself into some controversy by having relations with a Greek horse riding champion named Freddy Sepirius, having a child out of wedlock. This may not seem shocking to you depending on your views of marriage, but in 1973, this was a pretty big deal, and it was an even bigger deal in Greece. I'll save the in-depth history of Greece for its dedicated Eurovision Travel Guide episode, but basically Greece in 1973 was in the middle of a revolution/military dictatorship/coup d'etat. Essentially, the government of the day was led by a right-wing group of military colonels who wanted to control the country, with one of their desired changes being the restoration of traditional Greek Orthodox Christian values. If you know anything about Christianity in general, having unmarried relations is a big no-no. Despite the scandal, Marinella still ended up representing Greece at Eurovision a year later, but how did this come about? The story of how Marinella was chosen to represent Greece at Eurovision is a bit insulting, to be honest. Basically, she was the Greek broadcaster's last choice because their first pick had an even bigger controversy to deal with. The backstory of Greece joining Eurovision basically starts around 1969. The Greek broadcaster was essentially taken over by the military junta who ruled the Greek government. The Greek broadcaster ERT held EBU membership since 1950, and with the takeover, the broadcaster changed its name but essentially remained the same, so their membership wasn't interrupted. The leader of the junta, who served as prime minister from 1967 to 1973, wanted to create a second broadcaster to strengthen propaganda for the dictatorship. The infrastructure wasn't sufficient to host a second broadcaster, so instead they established channels within the pre-existing network. Now, I don't know the motivations for Greece wanting to join Eurovision while the country is under a military dictatorship, but I theorize that if I were the government of the day, I would want to legitimize our cause as much as possible, and a great way to do that is through the Eurovision Song Contest. What better international platform to showcase the superiority of Greek culture? Again, I stress this is a theory and not confirmed fact. The broadcaster began airing the contest around 1969, and in 1973, the Greek broadcaster submitted their application to join the Eurovision Song Contest, and the EBU accepted the request. The Greek broadcaster held an internal selection, calling for artists to submit entries for consideration. The broadcaster initially chose the Greek rock band Nostradamus, which was formed in 1971 and had dominated the Greek pop rock scene in their early years. However, scandal erupts when one of the band members was allegedly found with an underage fan. The accused claimed the fan had been following them and denied the allegation. The family of the victim pressed charges but offered to drop the charges in exchange for a cash settlement. To the surprise of no one, once the scandal was made public, the broadcaster decided to go in a different direction. However, a problem arose when the broadcaster couldn't find anybody to replace the band. Their second choice was composer Mikis Theodorakis, who was abroad at the time and could not come to Greece. The broadcaster then approached their third choice, composer Manos Hadzidakis, who insisted on working with either Nana Mouskouri or Flori Dantonakis, both of whom had prior commitments. The broadcaster's fourth choice was composer Demi Roussos, who was in America and could not commit to the contest. It seemed like the Greek broadcaster was running out of options, but thankfully their fifth choice was available. They selected the composer Georgios Katsaros, who decided to work with Marinella, despite her family situation. Greece ended up sending the song Krasi Thalassa Ke Tagorimou, which translates as Wine, Sea, and My Boyfriend. Here's a sample of Greece's debut at the contest. La This song is perfectly Greek. I absolutely love this entry. The song is absolute perfection. The instrumentation, her vocals, all of the musicality is amazing. It's peppy, it's positive, it's carefree, and I can get behind enjoying a glass of wine, enjoying the smell of the seaside, and enjoying the company of my significant other. This clearly stands out in 1974, and this is the kind of flavor of Greek music that I adore and love. This is certainly in my top 5 of 1974, and it did not deserve to place 11th, only getting 7 points. The lyrics of the song are equally delightful. Translated from the Diglu Thresh website, the song proclaims the simple cure to life's problems. Quote, "The world runs asking for love, honor, and money, and the bouzouki doesn't stop weeping during the night, but for me, for me, for me, it's enough to have a bit of wine, a bit of sea, and my boyfriend." Such a simple way of life that I'm sure everyone would love to partake in. I know that I would appreciate some wine by the sea and somebody to share it with. However, the only drawback that I have with this entry is the performance. The backing singers are a huge problem for me. Their outfits are a mix of metallic gold and black, which doesn't necessarily feel Greek to me. I'm relying on the stereotypical white and blue colors that Greece is known for. The biggest problem for me is the fact that the backing singers are standing like statues and have literally zero emotional expression on their faces. This song is supposed to be fun in the sun, enjoying a delicious glass of wine by the sea next to your lover, yet they look like they work at a bank or some kind of government institution. They look bored out of their minds, and this does not jive with the mood of the song. The saving grace of this performance is the bouzouki player, and Marinella herself throwing around a tambourine to add some extra spice to the music. I'm not expecting 2024 levels of performance with backing dancers and fireworks, but at least look like you want to be there. After her somewhat successful debut at the Eurovision Song Contest, Marinella continued to develop her musical, film, and theater career by performing, recording, touring, and developing new styles, which became trendy among many artistic circles. This continued through the 1990s, as Marinella developed into a more mature performer. She reduced her performances at nightclubs, opting for venues such as concert halls and theaters. In 2003, she was featured in the New York Times, and in 2004, she performed in the closing ceremony of the Summer Olympics in Athens. Throughout the 2000s, she won a few awards for her style and music career, and she participated in a few charitable projects to support children's cancer research and the construction of a home for orphaned and unprotected children with special needs. Her Wikipedia page continues up to 2020, noting her performances becoming scarce as she ages. Apart from her first marriage, Marinella did marry a second time to Tolis Voskopoulos in 1974, with that marriage ending in divorce in 1981. It's not known if she had any children from that marriage, and Marinella is still alive as of the recording of this episode, living life at the age of 85, hopefully with a glass of wine in hand, sitting by the sea with her boyfriend, living life and soaking up the sunshine. And that is the story of Marinella, Greece's debuting artist at the Eurovision Song Contest. She is considered to be an iconic artist in Greek culture, with her musical styles varying across genres. Her list of songs, albums, films, theater projects, and other endeavors are so long that I didn't even begin to mention them in this episode, but essentially she has a very large artistic catalog, so if you're interested in more of her work, there is plenty to choose from. Her Wikipedia page notes her as the Great Lady of Song, and I couldn't agree more. Before we close today's episode, it's time for Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I share a Eurovision entry that I enjoy listening to, or maybe I actively skip it. Perhaps it's pure perfection or utter trash. Let's find out which entry gets Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the 1996 Estonian entry, Kaleki Hall. I apologize for my Estonian, that's probably not how you pronounce it, but that's how I'm pronouncing it. It's translated as Sound of Necklace, sung by Maria Lisus and Ivo Lina. Again, probably not how you pronounce those names, but that's how I'm pronouncing them. Composer Pete Paiusar, lyricist Kadi Silama, conducted by Tarmo Lienatam. Again, I've probably offended every Estonian person on the planet with my pronunciation, so just, I'm going to endlessly apologize and move on to seeing that they placed fifth, getting 94 points. It got 12 points from Finland, Iceland, and Sweden, 10 points from Poland and the United Kingdom, 8 points from Norway and Slovenia, and points from 6 other countries. There is a lot about this entry that's enjoyable. It's a nice 90s ballad. The voices of both singers are nice to listen to, and while I don't speak Estonian, clearly as I just indicated earlier, there is a decent amount of emotion in the song. However, there is a lot about this entry which is just 90s, and not in a good way. First off, the outfits of the two main singers are basically just office wear. And I know that fashion in the 1990s was basically either office wear or punk wear, but this is seriously bad office wear. And whoever handled the technical aspect of this entry needs to re-examine their life choices, because it makes absolutely zero sense to monochrome the faces of the singers throughout the performances. And it's not even monochrome for the whole 3 minutes, just part of the performance, and it's just the face. You can see the color bleeding on the side. It just makes zero sense to me, and I don't fully understand why this came fifth. The UK and Austrian entry did worse than this. That's right, Gina G, just a little bit, did worse than 1996 Estonia. And I mean, I love the Austrian entry as well. I mean, it's literally just like German gospel music played by a blind piano player. That did worse than this, seriously. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Regardless of the results, Estonia did well in 1996, and while I'm happy that they ended up placing fifth and getting a really good result, this is just monochromatic confusion, and for that reason, Estonia's 1996 entry gets Song of the Week. I find Greece's introduction into the Eurovision Song Contest absolutely fascinating. The country is undergoing a military dictatorship at the time, and while I don't know the true intentions of the country joining Eurovision, I'm glad they ended up joining the contest eventually. Their debut entry is perfectly Greek, and I absolutely love it. I'm also glad that despite Marinella's situation, she continues to be a beloved icon of Greek music, and I'm glad she decided to join the Eurovision family. It was an honor to tell her story. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with your thoughts or comments, you can reach out to our Instagram page at ESC101podcast. You can also send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes, and if you haven't already done so, please consider leaving a review and sharing the podcast with your friends. Remember that our episode topics are shifting, so next week's episode will be our last look at Eurovision history before we dive into Eurovision 2024. So stay tuned for our upcoming episode on the Eurovision Travel Guide covering Sweden. Jahopas avesses nesta vecka. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.